That's Tina Marie. I'm Tavis Smiley, and pleased to have you with us in this final hour of today's program. I was going to say I lied to you. I really didn't lie to you. This is live radio and things change. I told you we'd be joined by Dr. K, Ksenia Wise Whitehead out of Baltimore, on one of my favorite stations there, WEAA. She was our scheduled guest for this hour, but she has been called away on some breaking news back east. And so we have shifted gears in this hour to still discuss the same topic we were going to discuss with a different set of guests. So two conversations in this hour, all about the same subject, which is the National Day of Action rally planned for this Friday in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. On the backside of this hour, we'll talk to Tanya Clay House, who is Executive Vice President for Campaigns and Advocacy for the Hip Hop Caucus, a national nonprofit and nonpartisan organization connecting the hip hop community to the civic process. We'll talk to Tanya Clay House on the backside of this hour. But we commence this final hour today in conversation with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, a pioneering scholar and writer on civil rights, critical race theory, black feminist legal theory, and race, racism, and the law. She teaches law at both UCLA and Columbia. Not the subject of today's conversation per se, but it is interesting. I thought when I saw that she was coming on today that she teaches on two campuses, both of them embroiled in controversy right now with all these protests that students are engaging in across the country on Columbia's campus and, of course, on UCLA's campus here in L.A. Perhaps we'll discuss that at another time. But the focus of this conversation is the National Day of Action rally this Friday in Washington. And Kim Crenshaw, how are you today?
I'm all right, Tavis. I was really rocking the Tina Marie. That's
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, Tina is easy to rock to. She was
Square biz.
No, I have a list of the best blue-eyed soul singers of all time.
She's and on there.
Yeah, she's on the list, and she's top of the list for white females. There are a lot of white males on that list. Everybody from Kenny Loggins to Michael McDonald to Daryl Hall of Hall & Oates. It's a long list. But Tina certainly top of the list, at least on my list, top of the list for white females. No question about that. Let me make the most of my time that we have here, the 25 minutes that we have left here. Tell me about the National Day of Action rally this Friday, and we'll jump from there.
Well, you know, Tavis, I think we were talking about this earlier. This is the second year that we have called together a coalition of civil rights, human rights organizations, parents, teachers, all to protest against the effort to censor our books, to eliminate Black history, to take away our concepts, and basically to attack racial justice. So this year we are starting the protest on Friday at the Library of Congress. The idea, of course, is to recognize that knowledge is what we need to defend our democracy and to advance the reach of racial justice and inclusion. And that's exactly what's being attacked and taken away by this so-called anti-woke war and all of its dimensions. We've been saying, Tavis, since 2020, when a lot of this started, that this wasn't just an attack on critical race theory. It's not just an attack on the 1619 Project. It's really an attack on us as a people, and it's an attack on our role in this democracy. So this year, we are hoping that more people than ever before make their voices heard, make their opposition known. Those who are in the D.C. area are invited to join us at 10:30 at the Library of Congress, and we're going to march over to the Supreme Court, where, you know, this is the 70th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. That was all about the role of integrated, non-apartheid education to support our democracy. So we're going to go to the Supreme Court to remind them of that and to stand up and be counted.
Yep. Let me ask you a question that may have two parts to it. We'll start with one and move to the other, perhaps. And I'll talk more expressly about, as you've already kind of detailed for us, what we're protesting, what we're raising our voices about on Friday. We'll get more into the thick of things here in that regard in a moment. But let me just ask you a broad question that is somewhat, I think, somewhat philosophical, and I'm not naive in asking. risking it, given what you're doing this Friday. But I wonder whether or not in this country you believe, truly believe, that rallies and protest, and let's be clear, we taught the world how to protest. We've been black people. We taught everybody else how to protest. We kicked down the doors and everybody else came on through. So I am mindful, of course, of what we have done in this regard. But I wonder whether or not you think Americans at this point, we see this all the time, do we have protest and rally fatigue? Do protest and rallies still matter in this country?
I think, Tavis, what we're trying to do is to change the equation on the ground. And the equation right now has anti-woke racist extremism at 100. And the resistance to it, you know, just to use the gaming metaphor, is like about a 5. Mm-hmm. Most politicians, most decision makers, like the College Board that purged African-American studies of intersectionality and critical thinking about race, they look at the equation and they say, well, look, these crazy right-wingers are telling us to take Ruby Bridges out of the curriculum. They're telling us to downgrade Letter from a Birmingham Jail. They're telling us to say nothing about Audre Lorde and Angela Davis and all of these brilliant thinkers over time. They're telling us to get rid of this. And we're hearing nothing from the other side. We don't think people really care that much about this. So, of course, they are appeasing. Of course, they're eliminating things that we've been working generations to integrate into the canon of Black history, of American history. So this is about a show of force to say, don't get it twisted. Just because we're not being mentioned, you know, accurately on Fox News every night, just because we don't have the Moms for Liberty marching into school boards and crying and yelling and screaming, doesn't mean that we don't care about our history and we don't care about the well-being of our children. But the only way we can do that is to show that the majority of us are opposed to that. So, you know, protests are important for various reasons. One reason is to actually quantify that there is a silent majority that's not going to be mm-hmm. silent anymore.
Yep. There are other reasons on that list, and we'll let her unpack other reasons on that list why rallies and protests still matter and why the one this Friday matters. It's the National Day of Action Rally in Washington, D.C. More with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Smart talk for curious people just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Our guest is Kimberly Williams Crenshaw as we talk about the National Day of Action Rally in Washington, D.C. We'll be joined by Tanya Clay House of the Hip Hop Caucus on the backside of this hour, but we, again, are spending some time now with Professor Crenshaw about this rally planned for Friday. You said a couple things earlier that I want to come back to. We were talking a moment ago about why these rallies and protests matter. We're engaged in these rallies and protests primarily, as you said earlier, because we're engaged in a fight, a serious fight to preserve our freedom to learn. And that is an interesting frame to be in, where one is fighting to protect and preserve the freedom to learn. Here again, I'm not naive in asking this question, but where, when, how, why are we at a moment now in this country's history where we are literally engaged in a fight to protect and preserve the freedom for us and for our children to learn? That's a strange frame to be in a country that advances itself as a democratic experiment.
Yeah, it's strange if we don't understand the nature of racism in this country. I think, Tavis, a lot of people, you know, think that the advances that we've made, you know, since the 1960s, especially, you know, the breakthrough presidency of Barack Obama, that this is a story of an ever expanding democracy, always forward, backwards, never. But that's not an accurate understanding of our history. It's not an accurate understanding of what happens when the pressure to expand our democracy and our place in it lessens. Our society is like a rubber band. It only stretches when the pressure is there. The moment we let our foot off the pedal, is the moment of retrenchment. This is not the first time this has happened before. This is not the first time that electoral gains, gains in education, gains in our economic position were taken away from us. Basically, when those who benefited from our expanding role in the democracy decided that they didn't really care about us anymore, that it wasn't worth the constant conflict. The first thing that we lost was our right to vote, our right to learn, our various freedoms. This is what happened at the end of Reconstruction. So this is what we're facing right now, right? This effort to take away our political power always comes with the effort to take away our ability to speak our reality. And that's what this is about. 37% of the books that have been banned over the last 2 years are about race or by scholars of color or authors of color. So if they don't hear from us, they think it's okay. If we can't change the equation, it's going to continue. So, you know, you asked about the protest. You're absolutely right to ask that, which is precisely the reason why the National Day of Action has many activities. The signature one is the protest in D.C., but we're asking people all across the country to do something, whether it is to post something, whether it is to host a teach-in, host a conversation, read a banned book, call your congressman, call your school board person, oppose all of the proposals that are now in the mix to actually not only make federal law ban these books, but also to go against the basic ideas. They're trying to change EEOC and prevent us from collecting data on race and racism. They're trying to actually change the whole project of anti-racism and democracy. So we're asking everybody to do something on Friday, May 3rd.
Tell me how steeped you think this pushback is, because there are a number of ways to read this. Two come to mind rather immediately. The first way to read it, obviously, is that there are a handful, comparatively speaking, a number of politicians across the country who've made this their business. This is part of their personal ambition. I get that. Ron DeSantis, the list goes on and on and on of individual politicos who have advanced this sort of backwards, reductive agenda. But the other side of this coin is, again, when I asked a moment ago how steep this is, that that idea or that ideal permeates the demos. So my question is, how steep is it? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and it's deeply steep. So first of all, we have to understand that this is not a grassroots effort. This is billionaire dark money funded. Messaging, talking points, and organization. These organizations like Moms for Liberty that popped up, they are basically operatives from the far right that have seen this as an opportunity to actually use the Trojan horse of anti-wokeness in order to achieve some of their policy objectives that were virtually impossible to even imagine like 5 years ago. So they want to abolish the Department of Education. Just abolish it. They want to defund public schools and redirect this money into private schools, and many of those schools are religious schools. They want to get rid of disparate impact, which is an entire way of proving discrimination. This is stuff that was thought of as impossible before 2020. Now they see how racism and insecurities about, you know, fears about replacement can be used as a packaging for a whole range of right-wing extremist ideas. So yes, it's deeply a part of our ethos, because anti-Black racism has never really just gone away. It's gone undercover. Now it's back. And it's being packaged in a way that actually deconstructs so much of what we've taken for granted as American citizens.
You sort of teed this up. Let me follow up on what you teed up. And that is, for those who follow these things as we do in my seat and what you do in your lane, for those who follow this stuff, you come to realize there really is just a handful of people who are controlling and advancing this narrative. And by that handful, I mean, to your point, those billionaires. We could call their names, but they have the power and the pocketbook to force out a president at Harvard. They have the power and the pocketbook to pick the right case and work its way up to the Supreme Court to undo a corrective program like affirmative action. They have the power to do et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to educate you. You understand this. It's what you do every single day. But I'm coming back to it because it is unnerving, and I can think of other words, other adjectives, but it is unnerving to consider that in to a significant degree, we find ourselves in some of these fights because there are literally 3, 4, 5 people who have the resources to fund all of this. How do you read that reality?
I read that as a continuing reality of why our democracy is on life support. We have to remember, number one, that, you know, this democracy was actually created in such a way that gave disproportionate power to those who had money and wealth. That's what the whole three-fifths compromise was all about. We got to count as three-fifths of human beings, so the people who owned us got that much more power in Congress. I mean, this is hardwired into our democracy. So basically, for us, democracy means overcoming the rigged rules of it and creating the kinds of norms and an ethos about what a multiracial democracy has to look like that starts from where we actually are. So it means that we have to always be vigilant. We have to always fight against these ideas that they are cutting back on our access to the ballot simply because of election integrity. That's never been what it's really about. And we have to push back against the idea that not talking about this history is the way to overcome it. Not talking about racism doesn't create racial equity. It is the silence about talking about racism in this history that creates it. So there are a few who understand this and are willing to write checks to make sure that the truth about our country and our challenges is not shared with school children, is not shared with us. We don't know these stories. If we can't get our votes out, our bodies out, our conversation out, they will win. That's the one thing we know. If we don't fight, they will win. We need to know what we're up against. We need to be out there, and we also need to bring our allies out, those who will appease or who will run rather than stand for democracy and fight.
Yep. So every day we get updates. We, the nation, certainly we in the media business, we get updates every day on where the war between Israel and Hamas stands. We get updates every day on where the war between Russia and Ukraine stands. So give me your sense, give me your update on where you think we are in, as you refer to it, the anti-woke war.
I think we're in the point where the anti-woke war has gone around the world 3 times and we're just getting our boots on. Mm-hmm. We're just starting to recognize what we've been saying for years, that, look, they are not going to be satisfied by throwing a few of us under the bus. You know, there are a lot of people who thought, well, we'll pivot on CRT or we'll pivot on the 1619 project and the monster will go away. The monster is not interested in one particular instantiation of anti-racism. They want all of it. So we've been saying, look, what's going to come next is diversity, equity, and inclusion. No one really seemed to take that seriously until now. We're seeing diversity, equity, and inclusion being used as the new N-word. You know, a bridge collapses in Baltimore because of an accident, and who's responsible for it? The DEI mayor. A door flies off an airplane. Who's responsible for it? DEI engineers. They have weaponized anti-racism and used it as a way of basically calling us all the thing we don't want to be called, and any policy that integrates us into this society and into its memory as that thing that shall not be done. So if we're not recognizing how serious this threat is to us as a people and to the entire democracy, then I would say we haven't come out of the box yet. Our goal on Friday, and we're also having a virtual rally tomorrow at 7:30, 4:30 Pacific, to bring all of the leaders of the civil rights organizations and parents and teachers together, just like they did during the Montgomery bus boycott when they came together at night after walking miles to say, this is why we're in this. This is what happens if we don't do this. This is what will happen if we win. That's why we have to come together, Tavis, across all of the different organizations to say, if we can't name our reality, we can't change it. And they're about taking away our ability to even speak our reality into existence. We can't stand for that. That's why people have to join us May 2nd and May 3rd.
Here's my exit question here with the 2 minutes I have left. You mentioned Ruby Bridges earlier. I have known Ruby Bridges. I've had the chance to spend time with her and interview her over the course of my career. So you said her name, it kind of jumped out at me. Again, no naivete here. But what do you make of the fact that Ruby Bridges could have endured, the Little Rock Nine could have endured, I could do this all day long, but these persons historically have had to endure what they encountered, but they don't want their kids to learn about it. They don't want their kids to read about it. That's a non sequitur, if ever there was one, for me.
You put your finger on it. You know, just for the audience, Ruby Bridges was 6 years old when she desegregated Louisiana public schools under the protection of the National Guard. Now, she was old enough to experience that racism, to go to school by herself for an entire year. It seems odd, and that's not even stating it as strongly as we should, to suggest that six-year-olds now are too young to learn about what happened to six-year-old Black Ruby Bridges. That's the kind of outrageousness that we need to be speaking out against. And the majority of people we believe are with us, we just don't see each other out there. And that's what this is about, so we can all see that we are the majority on this issue and push back against those few that you mentioned who are manipulating the situation to the detriment of all of us.
The National Day of Action rally is this Friday in the nation's capital. We have been pleased to talk to Kimberly Williams Crenshaw and get her perspective on it. When we come forward, we'll talk to Tanya Clay House of the Hip Hop Caucus and get her perspective on it. Kim, good to have you on. All the best. You have a great rally this Friday.
Always, always, Tavis. Look for you to do something on the 3rd, too.
Right,
tweet, say something.
Indeed, get us. Indeed.